The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly, sponsored by PES 2012, released October 14th for PS3 and Xbox 360.
Exciting, informative, and unreliable in its use of adjectives, it's Football Weekly Extra. Today, Euro 2012, who's in, who's out, and who's in line for the biggest playoff disappointment since the Puritans closed the theatres, the pod reports. Meantime, club football ahoy! Liverpool, have you heard of them? They face Man United this weekend. We look forward to that and clear the decks for David Conn, JW's new best mate on the line with his take on the club's very own airline disaster, the MD's plan to stiff the rest of the league for extra cash. I'm guessing he likes it. Elsewhere, there's posts, tweets and more from the weekend. Can Newcastle continue their undefeated streak against Spurs? Can Bolton continue their defeated streak against Wigan? And what of the Rome derby? No Totti, no party? Those questions and more answered in today's Football Weekly Extra. All right then, off we go then with another Football Weekly Extra. Barry Glendinning is here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
How's it going?
Very well. Good. Greg Ruffley's here too.
Hi, James.
And we're very excited to introduce Marcus Christensen.
Hello.
He's from Sweden, you know. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about Swedish breakfast.
Yeah.
Swedish consumption of hot dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else have we been discussing?
Pickled herrings.
Pickled herrings, right. Okay, excellent.
We haven't been discussing Sweden qualifying for Euro 2012. No.
Exactly. And they have.
Yeah.
The best second place side.
Yeah, fantastic. Beat right. Holland 3-2 on Tuesday. Didn't think that would happen. And it probably did happen because we didn't have Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's our captain. And we clearly play a lot better without him.
Side playing better without Ibrahimovic in lineup. Shocker. That's interesting. Art Deco says, "Wehey, in your face, Dutch Masters and Portugal. Let's always play without Zlatan." Spain 2-0 in 2006, Holland 3-2 in 2011. I'm guessing that's a precedent there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, he continues, Eric H. is president, Karlstrom is Juninho, slip to mama. What's that mean, Marcus?
Release your thumbs. You've been holding them so hard, I believe, wanting Sweden to qualify. It's a bit of a new one for me as well. But
all right. Well, you've been away for a while.
I would imagine someone said that to Paul McCartney once when he was on tour in Sweden, maybe. And he's never put them back.
No, indeed not. And congratulations to Mika, by the way.
Yeah. And to the next recipient of his incredible largesse.
No.
It all goes wrong.
Yeah. Top heiress. Etc. Now, so there you go. Well, Sweden through. That's terrific. That's terrific. Also through from the Tuesday night games, you've got your France against Bosnia-Herzegovina. I'm sure lots of people were quite rooting for the plucky Bosnia-Herzegovina, but they go into the playoffs, more of which in a second. But Ireland, Barry, Ireland, what about that Armenia game?
Yeah, Ireland were magnificent. They're...
magnificently defensive.
Their best player was the referee, the Armenian goalkeeper, and the other Armenian goalkeeper. Oh, and the Armenian defender who scored the comedy own goal.
That was a magnificent own goal.
Yeah, it was superb. Ireland obviously had their playoff nightmare for the last against France when they were the victims of an atrocious handball non-decision. And this time... Armenia were the victims. Strangely, Ireland haven't been calling for a replay this time.
Well, playoff draw is about to be made in any second
any
now.
Second now, yeah, we're getting cricks in our neck looking up at the TV in the corner. But in 2009, Shea Given was whinging about the fact that Ireland had to play a seeded team, saying teams shouldn't be seeded. But he's been deafeningly silent this time around.
No Kevin Doyle in the first leg of the playoff, anyway.
Yeah, he was sent off for picking up two yellows. It was probably hard done by because the Armenian player he fouled made quite a meal of it when he was sort of caught him with his arm in the air. But I wouldn't worry too much about it. We've got Simon Cox, got Shane Long. They're perfectly adequate cover.
All right then. Denmark, Nico Bentler with the winner, eh? Terrific stuff in the victory over Portugal. And the Scots, that was a surprise. They didn't get the win away to Spain. And perhaps even more surprisingly, the Czech Republic did win in style 4-1 in Lithuania. So next time for the Scots.
I did the minute-by-minute report on the Scotland game, and they were absolutely slaughtered and very lucky to only lose 3-1. I think
really?
Spain kind of took it easy on them a bit in the second half.
It's It's always going to be difficult against Spain, the way they pass the ball.
But, oh, they were sensational.
Yeah, and I think Scotland need a bit of luck in the qualifiers with the draw. I mean, and they've got none. They haven't got any luck in the World Cup qualifiers. I think they've got Croatia, Serbia, Belgium, Macedonia and Wales. And they also need to replace that. I mean, David Weir is still playing him at centre-back at the age of 40.
Well, I'll tell you what, while we're saying that, the playoff draw has just been begun. So far, we've had Turkey drawing Croatia. Balkan bad blood ahoy there. Estonia, meantime.
Yes!
Ooh, get Republic of Ireland. Barry, a big yes. Have you not seen how plucky Estonia have upset the form books with their progress so far?
Yeah, but it was the draw everyone wanted. I think they're the poorest team of the four we've
got. The Estonians, you mean?
Yes. So if Ireland can't beat Estonia over two legs, then they don't deserve to be at the final.
Right. So, yeah. Right. Sound enough.
Far be it for me to patronise the right. Estonian.
Right. Well, not that we are in any way showing a lack of confidence in our own knowledge of the various Eastern European footballing entities, but how about we dial up Jonathan Wilson right now to get his impressions on what kind of threat they represent for Ireland, and indeed the other three playoff draws. Jonathan Wilson, are you there?
Yes, I am here, yes.
Yeah, there being a train to Sunderland.
That's right. Yeah, just gone through Doncaster, so
right.
Should have a bit of time before we hit the reception black hole that is Darlington.
Right. Apologies to any Darlington-based listeners, but anyway, okay. Estonia, Republic of Ireland, Jonathan, your thoughts?
Estonia aren't much improved over the last couple of years since Tomo Ridley took over for the second time. But you know, realistically, they're there because other teams in their group imploded. Serbia must obviously, but I think also Northern Ireland. I think had Northern Ireland not lost those two matches to Estonia, then obviously things would have been very, very different.
Now, in the meantime, the Czechs are through because they suddenly found a bit of form in their final game, denying Scotland a chance at the playoffs, and the Czechs, as a result, will take on Montenegro. How do you think that one's going to go?
It's hard to believe. I think the Czechs really were quite poor at the beginning of qualifying, but they seem to have integrated a lot of the young players who we saw at the under-21s. The Kadlec, for instance, who scored against Lithuania, yeah, he looked a very, very promising player. So I think the Czechs are a team who almost certainly will be better come next summer. But the question is what happens next month. And you know, as I said to you last time I was on, I still don't really know what's going on with Montenegro. I think the change of coach has really shaken things up. And while they played very well in the second half against England, they were outplayed in the first half and then they were comfortably beaten by Switzerland on Tuesday. So I think both those sides are quite hard to read.
Hmm. Bosnia-Herzegovina, a little bit unlucky perhaps not to take the group in their match at the Stade de France. How do you feel about their chances against Portugal?
Yeah, I mean, I think they really wanted to avoid Croatia for all the political reasons that are obvious. But after that, the team I really didn't want to get was Portugal. Portugal beat them in a playoff to get to the World Cup. I was on the Eurostar coming back from Paris yesterday with a group of Bosnian fans. And they were all saying that was the game they desperately didn't want because they felt that Bosnia had gone to Lisbon last time, had played very, very well, had been a bit unfortunate in that game, got back to Zenica, and then all confidence went. They suddenly thought, Christ, we're playing Portugal, playing Cristiano Ronaldo, we can't cope with this. And I think there is a danger that happens again. I think there's also a big worry for Bosnia that they were 13 minutes from qualifying. They played really, really well first half against France. They moved the ball very nicely. They broke very well. They really dominated down their right-hand side against Everard Malida. And then second half, there was fatigue, but there was nerves. They let France back in. But still, they were holding on until the Nasri penalty in some time. And to have been that close, can they then pick themselves up again for another big game against Portugal?
Well, that's very much the question, isn't it? Finally then, before Darlington Hove's interview, sucking all life out of this phone conversation, Turkey-Croatia.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Croatia last Friday and really they didn't impress me at all. I was very disappointed with them.
But then Turkey?
Turkey and the Hussidink, I think, haven't really hit the heights that they'd hoped for. I mean, obviously, yeah, they got the semi-final 4 years ago. But I don't think anything like as good a team as they were then. I think really they're both actually capable of being very, very flat as well. So I probably just about think Croatia will nick that, but it's that's another difficult one to call.
Huh. Jonathan Wilson, reiterating many of the points we were making in our pre-pod warm-up. Excellent. Just wanted to say as well, Italy, you mentioned Northern Ireland's implosion in that group. Oh, fantastic Italy win in the game over Northern Ireland in Pescara on Tuesday. Two goals from Cassano, the first, an absolute peach. I don't know if you remember that famous Del Piero goal for Juve against Fiorentina, but very, very similar.
There was some great Cassano quotes after that game. He said he was only going to continue playing for, I think, another 3 years, and said to the assembled journalists, look, I know you guys are going to miss me terribly, but at least Balotelli's coming behind me to give you lots to write about.
He is a laugh, Cassano, yes. Yeah, anyway, there you go. Without that, that's our little Euro qualifier segment. Could mention England, I suppose. We talked a little bit about England. A couple of listeners posting in their blueprints for England's success. Kay Wolf says, I think England's best chance just has to be to accept its shortcomings and become almost a parody of itself. Two bite-your-leg types in the middle, two greyhounds out wide, two freaks in the Carol Crouch mould up front, a Mike Bassett type in a sheepskin coat, shout at them. Imagine a nation collectively shouting that they don't like it at early doors to win your personal battles, earn the right to play, etc. Terrifyingly brilliant. Could work. And Parkwatch Canary just says, we just have to give up on the idea that we're one of the big teams. If we could all just agree we're basically on a par with the likes of Sweden, Ireland and Denmark, etc., then we might just actually enjoy playing.
Is that an insult? Or
I think it was, Marcus.
I sense that, yeah. It's disappointing.
And you should probably mention the Welsh as well. We got a bit of stick for not mentioning the last time. But
all right, the coming nation.
Yeah. Wales, eh? Well, no, they are, yeah. They've got some good players coming through. Yeah.
They beat Bulgaria in their last qualifier, was it?
Three wins in a row, isn't it?
No consequence, but yeah, they're looking good.
Having Ramsey installed as captain at the age of 20 as well stands him in good stead, because he's going to be a fixture in the team, isn't he? Providing he, you know, keeps injury free.
But, as you were saying for Scotland before, it is a very, very tough qualifying group.
Yeah,
that they faced for 2014.
There's no, like, kind of standout team. There's just a lot of, you know, kind of middling to strong teams, which is a problem, because you could look at that and think, well, Scotland and Wales would do well to kind of not finish in the bottom two places, maybe with Macedonia or something. So,
just run me through that group again.
Croatia, Serbia, Belgium, Scotland, Macedonia and Wales.
All right, Belgium, another coming team there.
Mm.
All right, then. Well, that is part one. Part two takes us on to one of the big stories, or two indeed of the big stories of this week, Liverpool Man United and Liverpool's brilliant plan for TV rights. Well, part two. Club football returns this weekend. One of the highlights will probably be the big match at Anfield, Liverpool hosting Man United. Greg, you're going along?
Yeah, I'm going to the match, yeah. Looking forward to it.
You are?
Yeah, very
good. Good record, Liverpool, against Man United of late there.
Yeah, well, at home, Liverpool haven't been beaten since 2007 by Man United. Mm-hmm. I mean, the interesting thing is with this match is, I mean, it's the first time that United will have rolled up at Anfield as the as the record holders with the 19 titles. I don't know if it's only coincidental that it's this season that Liverpool have decided to cut Manchester United's away allocation due to persistent standing in gangways and some of the fans' behaviour. But I think there'll be like 1,300 fewer United fans at the match than there normally are. So probably fewer banners with the number 19 on it, you know. So maybe that's a bit of brand protection by John W. Henry. Another shrewd move, you know.
Steven Gerrard widely reported to be back in the starting lineup for this game. Is that good news, do you think?
I think it is good news, yeah, because, I mean, Liverpool playing a 4-4-2 system have looked particularly open, and they've been vulnerable because I think there's been too much work for Lucas to do in midfield. Charlie Adam likes to play the ball. I mean, he's not ultra mobile. I mean, and when he does get a tackle in, he's prone to get booked. So I think putting Gerrard into the midfield and maybe reverting to 4-5-1 could be a safer bet against United. And maybe that means that Carroll, as much as he scored against Everton, he didn't particularly play very well. And I think he still needs to earn his place, so he might be dropped.
So
I think
the Jordan, one would be Suarez, would
I think you'd have Suarez and Coutinho and Downing as the three, with Lucas, Adam and Gerrard in midfield. Now that maybe gives Gerrard a little bit more freedom to do what he wants to do with Adam and Lucas kind of either behind him, or perhaps Adam will go in front and Gerrard will sit in and play so well like he did last season in his last match that he started, which was against Manchester United when Liverpool won 3-1.
Dirk Cowell hat-trick, of course.
Yeah.
Man United on top of the table, but looking a little bit wobbly of late. There was the draw with Stoke, draws with Basel and Benfica. They had one or two hairy moments against Norwich as well. Plus, of course, Wayne Rooney struggling to control his demon, so who knows what'll happen to him. But Vidic back, that might...
Both teams are going to look particularly shaky in defence. There could be a lot of goals in this game because Vidic is coming back and he's rusty. Ferdinand's particularly rusty as well. And I mean, Liverpool, Agger's not yet fit. Glenn Johnson's not fit. Martin Kelly, who's been very good at right back and he's probably the best right back the club's got, he came off injured for the England under 21. So, I mean, with all the pace that United have got in attack, I feel they could cause Liverpool a lot of problems. But you could say the same maybe if Suarez is on form and, you know, perhaps if Downing has a good game at the other end. I mean, traditionally it's won in midfield this game, but maybe it won't be this time around. Maybe it's either, you know, down to the strikers.
You mentioned the banners at Anfield. Do you think there's going to be any reaction to managing director Ian Ayres' intriguing plan about no longer collectively sharing foreign TV rights?
Be a bit difficult to kind of fit on a banner, but I'm not sure the
orange no. song.
Yeah. I can't think of anything that rhymes with that, collective TV rights, or maybe yeah, rights and something else perhaps. But I don't think there'll be much reaction to it. I think it's depressing. I think it's really depressing. I
think that the Liverpool fans by and large don't go along with it? Then
I don't. I mean, I think. People think fans generally don't think too deeply about things other than what's happening on the pitch. And if things aren't happening on the pitch, well, they think about what's happening behind the scenes. If things were going well on the pitch, I'm not sure they care that much. Mm. But, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. It's depressing that you're a club that, you know, in the past, Shankly has used, you know, socialist language when he talks about Liverpool, is thinking about doing a very capitalist thing and cutting out a lot of teams from money which they've got a right to at the moment under the shared deal. The other thing is that you can understand, you know, you can't be so naive to think that US businessmen who have come from a capitalist society aren't going to try and make as much money from you know, one of their business interests as they possibly can.
Right. It does seem that this may have been one of the reasons that they bought Liverpool.
Yeah, because in US sport, they like in baseball particularly, every team's profits at the end of the season are taxed, and that money then is distributed out to all the teams, which is a very socialist thing. And for that, they've maybe looked at the Premier League and thought, well, it's like a free market capitalist kind of model, and we can make some money in this.
Isn't one of the problems about Ian Ayres' plan not so much the ethics and the, say, lack of socialist philosophy behind it, but the fact that even in capitalist terms, it's ludicrously short-sighted? You cannot sell the rights to a team playing in a league if there isn't a league that is competitive around them. I mean, that's why the Spanish league TV rights are worth nothing internationally. Nobody cares. Well, one man who has an intimate knowledge now of the setup there at the New England Sports Group, the people who are running Liverpool now, is David Conn, who's just spent an exciting 3-day break in Boston with J.W. Henry and chums. David, first of all, what's your reaction to the Ian Ayres comments? And do you think it was just a random outburst by the MD, or is this part of a concerted plan to kind of float an idea that might not be too palatable?
I think what he did was say out loud what they're saying privately. And there is continual pressure on the TV deal in the Premier League, on the collective nature of the Premier League TV deal. So the overseas element of it, which has grown so much, is shared absolutely equally between all clubs. So Blackpool got 17.9 million last season and Manchester United got 17.9 million, even though, to be fair, with the greatest respect to Blackpool, which we have to say, most people in Kuala Lumpur, as Ian Ayres said, would probably be more interested in Manchester United than Blackpool. And the fact, which is definitely true, that the interest in watching the Premier League more widely is in, obviously, Man United, Liverpool, and the bigger clubs than it is in the smaller clubs, is, first of all, the original reason for the Premier League breakaway in the first place, that the big clubs said, we want to keep all the television money because it's us that everyone wants to watch. And that has continued the pressure of the big clubs thinking, you know, why are we sharing all this money, does continue in the Premier League. And it's a continual battle for the Premier League to keep that deal together.
Mm. Does seem a remarkably short-term piece of thinking, because you know, there are many reasons why people watch the Premier League, but I think the competitive nature of it is probably very high up them. David, though, John Dumbly Henry, is he a nice man?
Yes, he's a nice man. He's a very intelligent man, and he's famous in America for being very intelligent. And the things that he's done in the past, not just his financial trading, where in his career, which he ended up being basically a massive investment manager for huge amounts of money. And the way that he made his money is that he would get not only a fee for investing that money on behalf of Goldman Sachs and whoever, but he would also get a percentage of the profits. And during the economic boom, some would say economic bubble, that we lived through and that he lived through, I'm sure that he was one of the winners. And he made a huge amount of money, and he's sort of well known for taking this kind of cerebral approach to things. So researching long-term trends in trading, being interested in baseball statistics. I think people will find the piece interesting because he's admitting in that the statistical approach, this idea that, you know, everything they do is based on statistics, has actually been really exaggerated because of the book Moneyball. And in fact, he's admitting that they overspent on players in Boston, on the Red Sox, who've had a disastrous September collapse. And they're in turmoil over there. John Henry is, and the Fenway Sports Group, in absolute turmoil over the Red Sox collapse. And also, he suggests that Liverpool, where £35 million for Andy Carroll, £20 million each for Jordan Henderson and Stuart Downing in particular, he suggests that, A, it's not based on statistics and some genius by Damien Camoli that you know, there was some statistical thing in there that warrants those fees that the rest of us can't see. And second of all, he suggests that, in fact, they have overspent because they needed to convince the fans of both clubs that they were prepared to spend big.
There you go, that is David Conn. Marcus, you're a Liverpool fan, aren't you?
I am, as most Scandinavians are.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, we've had a television show going on since the 60s showing English Premier League, or First Division as it was before, on 3 o'clock on Saturdays.
Are they hiring?
I think they might be. And so everyone's got a team there, because in the winter we obviously don't play, and then we sit down and we got a betting coupon, the 13 games on there. And
pickled herring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A bit of schnapps and a bit of meatballs and all that. And then so everyone has got an English team, and they probably follow them more than the Swedish team sometimes.
Right, right. And Liverpool often go over and play their various games.
Very cleverly, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, what's your impression then of Liverpool? Bit of a shaky patch of late, the defeat against Stoke, the defeat against Spurs.
Well, two things. I think away they haven't been good, and they've only won when the opposition team have had a player sent off, which isn't great. They've lost both games when they played against 11. But also, if they win on Saturday, they're only 3 points behind United, which, considering the starts the two teams have had, isn't probably quite right, with United free scoring and all that. But then if it's 3 points with so much of the season to go, who knows?
Yeah, all right. And table doesn't lie, does it? Yeah. All right. Excellent. Barry, do you want to chip in with anything on Liverpool Man United?
No, not really.
All right, then.
I think there's enough that's been said. I would, Ian Ayres' comments.
Yes.
I think it's a big up yours to the huge swats, hundreds and thousands of Bolton fans in Kuala Lumpur, which he appears completely oblivious to.
Yeah.
They'll all be tuning in their hordes over the weekend to watch their team take on Wigan, you know.
Yep. It is a big game. We're going to talk about that in a second or two. Posts on the subject of bears, which are kind of the new poached eggs on the message boards. Here's Todd Butler, who says a quick comment on bear defence, because this might prove handy one day, Craig. The best defence against bears is make yourself look as large as possible. Wave your arms and shout at them. They have bad eyesight and won't challenge larger arms. Just so you know, when bears mark their territory, they stand up against a tree and do a handstand. They then mark their territory. I think we all know what he means there. It makes them seem larger to other bears. Although you'd think if they all do this, you'd think they would figure it out, says Todd Butler. Barry, bears.
I got an email from a guy. He lives in the Rockies and he's a hunter and fisherman. I'm not sure by trade or just a hobby. Hayden Janssen, and who once trained with Lille, he tells me, in Ligue 1.
But, right, okay. Well, they'll have anybody, won't they?
He said, let me quell one staunch rumour. Bear bells, the tiny bells that some hikers wear on their backpacks so as to inform bears of their presence and thus deter them. These have been proven countless times to actually draw bears into a location as their curiosity is piqued by the sounds. We in the Rocky Mountain West have taken to calling these dinner bells.
Huh, absolutely. Right, well, that's interesting, isn't it? The bear debate rages on.
Oh, sorry, Hayden also says you shouldn't use bear spray because it's concentrated chilies, and the actual spray, but
yeah,
parents covering their children with it results in the children, you know, suffering terrible chilly burns and stings and having to go to hospital.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? The bear behaviour is usually seen as a kind of synonym for certitude, but in actual fact, there's nothing less certain than how bears behave, because, you know, some people say... Interesting. Anyway, now, big games this weekend... All over the continent, in fact. Not sure which one you're looking forward to. Actually, I'm quite sure which one you're looking forward to, Greg. It's the Liverpool Man United, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then after that, obviously, West Brom and Wolves.
Obviously.
On Sunday, yeah.
Why?
The Black Country Derby. Well, I just think it's a big game for the former Liverpool manager, Roy Hodgson, because, yeah. I mean, he's not started the season well with West Brom. He finished the season very well with them, and big, you know, bigger things were expected probably this season. I mean, they've only won one game, and they're on 5 points just above Wigan. And Wolves have looked good, even though they're only on 7 points. And I think if they were to lose against the big rivals at home and plunge them further down the table, that could put a hell of a lot of pressure on Roy Hodgson early on. And I think this time of the season now is pivotal with the chairman. They start to make a decision about a manager with three quarters of the season to go, whether they should stick with him or whether they should get somebody else in who can kind of salvage the situation. So I think we might start to see a few more sackings.
Really? But do you think Roy Hodgson might be in that at-risk category?
I think a couple more defeats, but possibly. Yeah, I mean, they didn't hang around with Di Matteo, did they? I mean,
well, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. What catches your eye this weekend, Marcus?
Well, I think that Norwich Swansea is quite interesting for me. I like both teams, actually. I think Paul Lambert and Brendan Rodgers have done great things. And I think Norwich showed at United that I think they're going to be a handful for every team. They've had good results and bad results, but I think they play a good football and they really believe they've got a really good team ethic. And Lambert has obviously picked up things from clubs where he's been in Germany and in Scotland. And I think he's working really well. But I can also see Swansea with a brand of football equally winning there.
Oh, my word. Barry?
I'll go for Arsenal Sunderland.
Will you?
I will,
Will
yeah.
you really?
Yeah. It's just interesting.
Won't that be terrifyingly dull?
It probably will be, but it's a big chance for Arsenal to get their season back on the rails, I think, with an easy home victory over a team that is not playing well at all. Nicholas Bentner can't play for Sunderland because he's there on loan from Arsenal, which is a rule I find increasingly...
Only in the Premier League.
Odd, yeah, strange. Mm. But because I would imagine he'd really be trying hard. But of course, it's for Arsenal's benefit that he's not playing... And there are increasing murmurings coming out of the Stadium of Light that Steve Bruce is on his way out, and it would be harsh probably to sack him if his team don't win away at Arsenal, but this could hasten,
certainly wouldn't help.
Hasten his departure.
There's some other big games out there, aren't there? There's also Chelsea-Everton. Everton have a good record against Chelsea, don't they?
Yeah, they've done well against them in recent years. I think they won. Did they win at Stamford Bridge last season? I think it might be in the Cup.
They beat them at Goodison, certainly, in May.
I think they beat them in the Cup last year as well. Yeah, I mean, they've done really well against them. I just think Everton need to keep Lewis Sahar fit because without him, who is he's the best striker, and when he's fit, they can
score
goals.
He is the striker, I think.
Yeah, well, he is the striker, yeah. when he's not fit, they haven't got one. So Tim Cahill has to go up there. So
he's great. He's quite good, though, isn't he? Velios?
Is he going to tell us about this Greek guy then?
No, it looks very interesting. I think people have seen him in reserve team games. He's only 20.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't cost much, of course, because it's Everton. But I think the end of the season he could have 8 or 9 goals.
All right then, one to watch. Whatever his name is, keep an eye out for him. All right, Man City will be taking on the undefeated so far Aston Villa. Norwich Swansea, you mentioned that, QPR Blackburn. QPR haven't won at home in 7 matches in all competitions. Yeah. Aye, aye, aye.
And they're 11th in the league. Ooh, so all right, isn't it?
Hey, how about Fulham's trip to Stoke? That was the game that Fulham won 2-0 last year, which was about the only game they'd won ever away from home at all in football history.
They scored about 228 goals in the last match, didn't they, Fulham, as well, against QPR? So
absolutely.
They might be feeling a bit confident when they go there. Although Stoke was they were the team this year that I thought might do particularly well and finish maybe as high as 7th again. So
really?
Yeah, so I could kind of do with Stoke, you know, pulling out a good result in
all
that
right.
game. So don't feel too much like a fool.
And also this weekend, Newcastle-Spurs. Now, that is a big game. Newcastle are unbeaten now in 12 matches in all competitions. This is a game that pits fourth in the league, Newcastle against sixth, with a game in hand, Spurs. But the suggestion among many Newcastle fans that this may be where the Magpies' luck runs out. This is very much the toughest test they've faced so far. Tottenham resurgent of late, no? After those early mishaps against the Manchester sides?
I think Spurs have got a really good first 11. I think they are extremely good with Bale, and whether it's Lennon or Kranka or Van der Vaart on the other side, and Modric in the middle. And even the back line with Ledley King, I think a lot depends on Ledley King. They look so much better with him at the back. And he has been playing, is it 4 games in a row?
Yeah.
Maybe now.
So, and they've had the international break. So
yeah, he might be fit for another one.
Whereas Newcastle's back line, Stephen Taylor et al. Against Adebayor and co., Aaron Lennon, etc., that's possibly a little less convincing.
Yeah, I think we might find out a lot about Newcastle this weekend.
Oh, all right then. Was hungry to know more about that team. Also this weekend, Wigan-Bolton. Is it going to be 7 defeats in a row for Bolton? Is it? And could Owen Coyle find himself amongst that select group of managers you were just talking about with the heads on the chopping block?
Well, quite possibly, yeah. I mean, they've started the season terribly. I mean, partly due to the injuries they've had to key players, but in other matches that they were expected to win, they haven't got the results as well.
This is a must-win fixture, surely, for the Trotters.
You think so. They are, they're away, but, I mean, and Roberto Martinez is desperate for a win, but, I mean, the defence of both teams has been really awful in the last few games they've played in. So, I mean, I imagine there'll be a lot of goals and maybe some entertainment for all those fans who'll be watching in Kuala Lumpur, as Barry alluded to. Yeah. Early on, I expect there'll still be more fans watching in Kuala Lumpur than there probably will be at the DW Stadium. As much as Gartside and Dave Whelan go on about the passion, I mean, they don't actually get them through the turnstiles in Bolton and Wigan. So,
All right, fair enough. My pick for the weekend might be something from Serie A. You know,
Rome derby, perhaps.
Could be Rome derby. Or could be Catania Inter. I have a funny thing that Catania could get a result there. Inter, who today talking about Sammy Eto'o coming back during the winter break at ANSI, or however that's pronounced. He said that he'd like to come back for a month or two, and Moratti's up for it. His Russian paymaster's less keen, but the Italian press all over this and reckon it could happen. But there you go, Inter at the moment without him, without Forlan, who's injured, and they're at Catania, who are a spicy lot, coached by Vincenzo Montella, former Roma glory, and an interesting one, that. And, of course, speaking of Roma, they have the derby, 137th Rome derby, and Roma are on a bit of a roll here. They've won the last 4 clashes with Lazio. Totti won't be playing. No less than 21 players in the 2 squads have never played a Rome derby before, so that's going to be interesting, isn't it? Or not. Not sure why that would make it interesting.
Why isn't Totti going to be playing?
He's injured. Right. Yeah. But, you know, perhaps Luis Enrique's project for Roma going forward doesn't, ideally, in Luis Enrique's mind, doesn't depend too heavily on Totti. So with Bojan getting a bit of confidence in his last game, it'll be interesting to see how Roma do. You know, they are an evolving thing, and they do seem to be showing signs of acquiring the physiognomy that Luis Enrique hoped to import from his previous job at Barcelona. But, of course, Lazio doing so well. The big question there is closer. Is he going to be fit or not? Knee, knack. Interesting. Well, that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. Monday we'll be back with a special Eurotastic edition. Barry's going to be there, also Philippe Auclair and Michael Cox. So that'll be an insight-packed edition of the pod. Barry, in the meantime, you're going to be doing extra research and watching lots of football this weekend, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to Ireland this weekend for my 20-year school reunion. So I'll be enjoying drinkies with all my old classmates from my Gulag boarding school, many of whom I haven't seen for 20 years.
Wow, so will the priest be turning up as well?
I don't know, but I'm bringing a sock through which to drink lots of lager and a packet of hobnobs with which to play fun after-dinner games.
Okay, looking forward to Monday's pod then. Fantastic.
I may be slightly hungover and even more ill-informed than usual.
Right, okay. Marcus Christensen, thanks so much for joining us today. Greg Ruffley, enjoy the weekend.
Cheers.
Barry, you were obviously going to enjoy the weekend. Thanks to Ben Producer. There is a Europaper roundup, as usual, up on Friday morning, so do have a look at that if that takes your fancy. Otherwise, have a super weekend. We'll speak to you on Monday.
The Guardian Football Weekly, sponsored by PES 2012. Forever evolving, forever football, forever Pro Evo.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.